Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
the award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Right now is one of the most important times in the 26-year history of Joy. Times are tough financially, but that will never stop us delivering powerful, meaningful, and uplifting radio for you. To get ready for the future, we're launching Joy Nation, and we need your support to do it. So help Joy by asking your workmates, your next door neighbour, your mum, your dad, your siblings, and of course your friends. Go to joy.org.au and make a donation to build Joy Nation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday 10 till 12.
You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. I'm Macca.
And I'm Tass.
Here's Tass.
Our next guest, of course, is David Davis. David Davis is the member for Southern Metropolitan Region, which makes him one of my local MPs, Upper House. He's the Shadow Minister for Equality, the Shadow Minister for Public Transport, the Shadow Minister for Infrastructure, and we'll have to ask him what the rest are because we ran out of room here in this
grid. I know, there's not enough
grid. Good morning to you, David.
Good morning, Taz. Good morning, Macca.
Great to have you back on the airwaves.
Now, we should warn you, we're feeling a bit naughty today. I don't know what it is. I think it's the first weekend out of lockdown and we're...
I think the psychology of that could be quite interesting.
Yeah, I know.
Now, David, what's been your highlight since we've been able to get out and about again? What have you done that's been nice and engaging with people?
Well, I've had a drink outside on the street, and you know, in a bar with a couple of colleagues. But we've been sitting most of the week, so the Upper House sat 4 days this week, so we didn't get out until late on Friday. So we haven't yet fully enjoyed it. I just talking to my daughter and saying, I think we're allowed to go to the shops now.
Yes,
I need to go down to Kmart and buy some supplies. So there you are. So
well, you won't be going.
The small things that amuse people.
Well, you won't be going to Kmart to buy a Cartier watch, will you?
No. I've got some old curtains. I've got a store, so I, you know,
old what?
What are you gonna, you've got to put them somewhere dry, and I get one of those vacuum packs. I think. So
I love that. So. You know,
actually, it's nice seeing the human side because, you know, what we get is normally the politics. And you're talking about ordinary stuff that human beings have to do, like storing curtains and buying vacuum packs. That's great, Dave.
One of your advisors will be beside themselves. This is not on your this is not on your talking points. You're going to be in deep trouble.
I don't worry too much about those things.
Well, the thing about curtains is I gave up on curtains years ago. I don't have any curtains.
Well, that's why David's storing them.
Yeah, okay, so you're moving on as well.
So I just hope there's no one looking in, Taz.
Well, my view about that is very simple. If somebody chooses to look in, that's their problem, not mine. I'm not asking people to look in.
You leave yourself open for that, I think.
Yeah, I'm quite serious. You know, there was a little while ago, quite a few years ago, my partner and I were looking at buying a tiny little house, believe it or not, a house with a garden and a driveway in the CBD. We didn't buy it because my partner said, everybody can look in the backyard. Because there's a high-rise right around the house.
That's right, leave your clothes on.
And my view was, well,
it's probably worth a fortune now.
Well, if people want to sit on their balcony and watch me in my underpants sunbaking or reading The Age, that's not my problem. Really, it's not my problem.
David's not going there at all.
I'm not the line here.
Next question.
Now, we're gonna segue to something slightly more serious, David. Watches, but more particularly, as a general concept, we all know Australia Post and what has happened there. What is your view, David? If you're in a job and you're well remunerated, and also as part of that, there is a bonus structure with clear KPIs. How do you make the case for then giving someone an expensive watch because they did their job? I mean, what are your views on that?
Well, one of the problems, I think, for Australia Post is that it's neither fish nor fowl. It's, in one sense, it's a public... of course, it's publicly owned, but it's a separated government business entity. So it's sort of, in theory, and, you know, I've stressed that, in theory it's meant to operate out in the marketplace in a more commercial way, but actually, of course, in the end, it is a public institution. And, you know, I think that's what's come to the fore. And the Prime Minister's obviously, you know, made his views pretty clear that, you know, that this was a step too far. I don't have a problem with a commercial enterprise having incentives for its staff. I think that makes a lot of sense. But this becomes a problem, I think, again, in these entities where, you know, they're sort of betwixt and between.
I suppose the challenge there, David, is, you know, as you said, it's publicly owned, but it has to operate in a commercial space. So the executives that you recruit, you want to recruit the best possible people, and if part of that process is remuneration and incentives... I mean, TAS has a particular view about publicly owned entities or not-for-profits about incentives. You know, we differ there. But I think the same thing is if it is a company, you know, a company that is owned by shareholders, not in this instance the Australian people, again, going outside what you've agreed contractually with people to give them a valuable gift when they're already being incentivised... I find that quite disgraceful. It's actually a breach of trust with your shareholders or your stakeholders, don't you think?
Yes. I think in the end, these things are better when they're documented and very clearly set out ahead of time. And I think that's got to be the primary focus. But I don't think you can, do it easily in these mixed entities that are sort of sitting halfway between. I think there's just always going to be a difficulty finding the spot that people are happy with those, and this is such a case, I think.
And in some ways, what you're describing is the integrity of the governance process in place, and
yeah.
I would support what you're saying here, David. My concern about this is a little bit different, and that is that in this environment where there are so many people who are losing their jobs... whose businesses have shut down, can't pay their bills, are now queuing up for food, is it right? And what message does it send for a company, a publicly owned company, to be giving its senior executives
It does feel a bit discordant at this time, I agree, and I understand that point. I think there's a legitimate point to be made there. I mean, Oz Post is a very important firm when you think about it, though. The post is still very important for a lot of people. It's still often the only way that you can get to every household in an area, and I say that in a political communication sense. Not everyone's online, not everyone's looking at electronic mechanisms and so forth, so it's still quite important. And we see even things that trip up with it. We've seen in the council elections, just finished them, the lock-off day, I think, was the 23rd, which was a public holiday. Australia Post wasn't working. You know, we asked a question in the upper house this week of the local government minister, said, didn't someone sort of point out that this was going to be a problem? People would think they could put it in the mail by 6 p.m. on the 23rd and they'd be right, but actually it wasn't going to be picked up that day.
Well, I suppose when they did pick it up, they probably postmarked it. But it's a good... I mean, when you listen to the Victorian Electoral Commission, they're saying, oh, look, you know, it's been very successful. We've got all this. I know of many, many people who'd actually received the SMS that your ballot paper is on its way, right? So the Victorian Electoral Commission has got your details, either because you've updated it or in the past you provided your mobile. Now, putting aside where the address that might be on record is wrong, I know of many cases where they've been advised that their ballot paper's on the way and they've never got it. Never got it.
I haven't heard that, Macca, as a matter of contrast. I haven't heard that. Not in my network.
There was a couple of municipalities where there seems to be a problem. There was a couple of pictures came to the fore of a post box in Wyndham, which was chock-a-block with, you know, overflowing with letters. People had posted them, but clearly they hadn't been picked up.
Yeah.
So there are problems around the system, and, you know, I think you can only compound that by actually putting the close-off date on a public holiday. I think that was an error.
Yeah. Now, we're going to go to a break, but I'm going to give you a zinger question, David. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Opinion polls. Now, you've seen an opinion poll in the last week or so. 27% of Liberal voters agree with the way Michael O'Brien is leading the party. 15%, I think, of all voters. Comment?
Well, I'm happy to talk about these polls, but you should also add to the list the story that we had on the front page of The Australian a couple of days ago. Kudos, KUDOS, $2 million paid for by Daniel Andrews and the Department of Premier and Cabinet for polling, you know, sort of regular polling of the Victorian community. We think that that polling, publicly funded, taxpayer-funded polling, you know, we're very doubtful about the way that's being used. We think it's been used for some of the COVID response to sharpen Mr. Andrews's responses, and we think that some of this polling should be into the public domain, given it's taxpayer-funded.
Hold the thought.
I think the results should actually be published.
Hold the thought. We've got to take a break, otherwise we'll get in trouble.
And then
we'll come straight back and continue this topic.
We'll come straight back. Stay with us, David.
A little less straight than other radio stations. Joy 94.9.
This is Saturday Magazine with Macca and Tass on Joy 94.9. Our guest is David Davis, the leader of the opposition in the upper house. Macca.
Good. Thanks, Tass and David. Look, let's come back. You talked about the, government-funded polling. I agree. You know, I think it should be made public, okay? If it informs the government's response, I think that's a good thing in some matters. But I'd like to come back, you know, so I've made my position clear there that it should actually, that polling should be public. 27% of Liberal voters think, you know, believe Michael's doing a good job. 15% of all voters.
What does that mean? Yeah, what does it mean for the Liberal Party?
What does it mean?
I don't often get into a discussion about the details of polls, but let me just be quite clear. This is not a representative sample by any stretch. It's an online sample of people linked with Twitter and linked with other electronic mechanisms. It's an uneven sample, so we don't actually put a lot of store in that particular poll.
We might have to debate that with Ipsos, who conducted the survey.
It's not a good poll. That one. I mean, there are some very well established polls. This mechanism that's used here, but online poll in this manner is not a good quality representative poll. So I'm just, you know, it is what it is, but.
Okay, let's say there's an error of, say, 5 or 7%.
Well, let's say there's an error of 30%.
Well, then it's 57% for Michael O'Brien. He's going to shit it in.
Let's say there's a selection bias that's there because of the online nature of it. I think you do, if you're going to take polls that purport to mention, you know, deal with public opinion in a thoughtful way like this, we might just have to wait for the next news poll or one of the other established polls that's done in a randomised way. This is not a randomised sample.
Let's flip it then, David, and let's say that this was a poll of Daniel Andrews. What would you say to that? Let's say that the result was 15%. What would you say that means?
I probably wouldn't overcook a poll that had this kind of basis is my first point, and I think that's the piece of advice. I'd also say it's a simply one poll, and I wouldn't get carried away with it.
We're going to run a poll on how you vacuum pack curtains. Amongst
I was looking online, and the problem seems to be if you put them into packs, that you end up with a sort of a crease. That's what's distressing. Yeah.
Now, there's something I've been thinking about since I knew you were coming on, and I did earlier thank Michael O'Brien as leader for sticking to his commitment to make a Liberal parliamentarian available at least once a month. We did have a challenge with that previously, before Michael became leader, so I just want to put that on record. I think it's great that you know yourself and others, you know, your colleagues put yourselves up.
I'm always very pleased to, as you know.
It's a great thing. Now, no confidence motion. The opposition, and correct me if I'm wrong, you can move one no confidence motion per term, is that correct?
Correct, in the lower house. Correct.
In the lower house, yes. Okay. So my question is, David, and I watched nearly all the debate on that.
You need to get a life, Macca.
Oh, look, you know, you find stuff out that's interesting. You find stuff out. But my question is, David, the hotel quarantine inquiry originally was to report next week. It's now, I think there'll be an interim report, but I think, you know, it's December 21. But when you did the no confidence motion, you were working on the basis or the understanding that the hotel quarantine inquiry report would be the 6th of November. Why did you choose to move or to bring forward your no confidence motion before that report had been handed down? I don't understand why.
We thought this was the right time to do it on balance. I mean, you can always make an argument for this time or that time and a different time. That's a legitimate set of points to debate. The view was very strongly that this was the correct time to do it. I think Victorians were wanting more transparency and accountability around the response to COVID. I don't think we've still got the details that we want. I mean, I carried a motion in the upper house this week seeking the briefings that are signed by the Chief Health Officer and provided to the Minister for Health on each of the COVID-19 orders. Now, you know, the government still hasn't provided those. They should be in the public domain. We think there are many things about the government's response that have not been satisfactory. Likewise, when it comes to the hotel quarantine issue, we think the failure of government ministers and to provide documents that were sought, the failure of people to answer.
But we haven't seen the report from the inquiry yet, David, though, so aren't we being a bit premature?
The evidence has been extraordinary in itself. I mean, the amnesia that's there. We're very aware that the inquiry is hamstrung, so, you know, we don't hold that the inquiry is the be-all and end-all of this. The inquiry hasn't been able to compel witnesses. It hasn't been able to get all the documents it wanted. It isn't a royal commission. We believe a royal commission is actually needed into the series of issues, not just hotel quarantine, but the failure of contact tracing, the whole management of the COVID-19 crisis in Victoria. It is only in Victoria that the disastrous second wave came in the way it did. That was partly due to the hotel quarantine errors, but it was also significantly due to the failure of having in place a proper and adequate contact tracing system. So when the bug got out, it couldn't be contained. This is squarely the Minister for Health and the Premier's responsibility. We also think the decisions of the government to form the crisis cabinet of eight, which is the sort of gang of eight as it's called, and the Premier to seize all power and make a number of the senior bureaucrats report directly to him. So the Secretary of DHHS reports directly to the Premier since the 10th of April on COVID matters. It's bypassed the Health Minister and straight to the Premier. All of those issues in the DHHS that relate to the COVID response, in effect, the Premier is the lead minister. He's meddling Some of the decisions of the public health unit are being overridden. He's not listening to them in the way. I could go on for a long time.
I think meddling is a bit.
It's actually not. That's what's happening. And the point here is that it's not just about hotel quarantine. The failures of this government in its response to COVID-19, extraordinary damaging failures, are much beyond the hotel quarantine issue. So the inquiry is one aspect. It's an inadequate inquiry, as we've said, not being critical of Jennifer Coate in any way personally, but she hasn't been given the powers and the strength that she needs to do the work that she should have been doing on this. And the issues are far beyond.
So what would you like to see? What do you think should happen?
Well, we've said in terms of the errors here...
Because you obviously don't want to see the report.
There should have been a Royal Commission. There should be a Royal Commission to get to the bottom of what has gone wrong here and get this right into the future. But I actually think the Premier should go after the damage he's done to the state. It's extraordinary. The lockdown that has been put in place, and be clear, the lockdown is there because the wave came, it got out of quarantine, the contact tracing wasn't in place, so we couldn't control it in the way New South Wales has controlled a number of these outbreaks. And that's squarely the Premier's fault, it's squarely the Health Minister's fault, make no mistake. And, you know, the damage that's been done because we botched those things is immense. So, you know...
And do you attribute the aged care deaths to Daniel Andrews as well?
In part. Obviously, there's Commonwealth oversight on those in terms of...
Or lack of oversight.
They're officially responsible for the regulation of aged care. However, public health is actually a state responsibility, and it doesn't matter what the institution is in the country, you know, whether it's a restaurant or a factory or an aged care centre, the public health unit has got direct responsibilities there. So
that's a little bit like saying that, you know, my neighbour is responsible for my children's behaviour.
No, it's not quite, because if there is an outbreak in a particular location, whether it's a school, whether it's a factory, or you choose whichever work setting you want, or other setting, the public health unit has a whole set of overarching powers and responsibilities, and that is what hasn't been well discharged here. I don't absolve the federal government of the response there. You know, clearly they've got some oversight in that area too. So I'm not saying that is not a factor. I'm just saying that the state government is a factor too.
We've actually run out of time, Dave, and it's interesting.
The switchboard's gone a bit feral.
A phone
feedback here.
This is quite important. I mean, I'm actually very angry about what has happened to the economy.
We all
and
are.
And so many of the small businesses that have been... you know, just killed by the blunt instrument of the harsh lockdown when there were other alternatives. We still haven't seen the documentation and the basis of each of those public health orders, and we should have. And, you know, the contact tracing failure is squarely one of the key factors that has meant we've had that lockdown when we could have managed it differently if we'd had a better system.
Yeah. We hear you, David, and someone whose phone number is in 555 is not a fan. If you get an SMS from someone who ends in 555, ignore it.
No, I don't think that's fair, mate.
I was happy to engage, but...
Oh, no, I don't mean ignore it. I mean he's made a very strong point, which...
they're very angry.
Very angry. But, look, it's great to have you on, David, and thanks again. And, look, really good luck at Kmart.
Enjoy your curtain shop
with your vacuum bags. I'm going to have a vision of you kneeling on the vacuum pack as all the oxygen is sucked out of it, and it won't help me thinking about the upper house.
Enjoy the rest of your day, David. Thank you very much for your time again this morning.
Pleasure.
Bye.
Well, that interview certainly generated a bit of feedback. The switchboard has literally almost blown up. But 317, who is one of our regulars and one of our mainstays, does say, I am not an ALP voter, but I saw a man attend press conferences every week, every day without fail. That's not the sign of a dictator, as the label has loosely been used by the right wing. I'm disgusted by his arrogant attitude. And what about the last comment, Macca?
Said that David Davis wanted... Made me want to throw up in my mouth. Slagging off Daniel Andrews is, actually I need to censor it a bit, is a dog act. He calls him a libtard.
That's 555. 555. Love your feedback. We love everyone's feedback.
And,
really.
You know, look, it's all good. You know, it's all good because... You know, when people hang themselves, it's usually on a platform.
Saturday Magazine is proudly sponsored by Velocity Rewards, the loyalty program of Virgin Australia.